Good afternoon, gardeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena, and last week I was so inspired with my guests Penny and Ian, who were talking about gardens to visit, that we're having them back again today. And we're going to be talking about travelling the world and going to see gardens all around the planet. So Ian and Penny are the directors of Hikawe Garden Tours. And tell us, Ian, where have you been to recently around the world to visit?
Well, very often we go to Japan. That's kind of has been our kind of bread and butter place. That's the place we go. We know best of all. We've been there very many times, and we have a good set of things that we usually go to. And we usually try to add a couple more so that we don't get bored, so that we're stimulated ourselves as well as our the punters that come with us.
The punters. I'm going to be a punter.
Well, we actually feel like we sort of almost have a kind of little family that we go with. You know, they're people who we try to get them to meet together beforehand. Mm-hmm. And some people afterwards become friends and do things that when they haven't met before.
That's, okay.
You know, that's one of the virtues of going in a sort of nice small group.
Oh, right. How big's your groups?
Between 10 and 15.
Oh, that's manageable.
Occasionally we've had bigger groups when we've taken students, but our most common ones we have with that kind of number.
And your students are generally landscape
And architectures.
And architect students, yep.
So we actually do, our tours are designed around not only gardens, well, that's the kind of core of it,
right.
But we believe that gardens are part of a bigger context.
Okay.
So we add some art and some architecture, usually quite select bits of those that are in some ways associated or relate to gardens.
Okay. So listeners, Penny and Ian are teachers as well, so very academic, and all want you to learn all about the context and the philosophy behind these gardens. So it's all a learning experience as well.
That's right, yes.
I love the beauty of the Japanese garden, so different from what you see in anywhere else in the world. And I think for me, I've only been to Japan once on a stopover, so I didn't get to see any gardens. But people who've been there told me, oh, beautiful cherry blossom festival. The Japanese go mad when it's cherry blossom time.
They do.
We avoided that to start with when we used to take students from Unitech there quite often. We didn't go in cherry blossom time because we thought it would be too hectic and too intense, but we have since been, and actually it's very beautiful and very calm. The Japanese have had their seasonal cherry blossom festival for centuries, and they know how to do it with elegance and finesse, and they picnic during the day with their families and enjoy the cherry petals falling down on them towards the end of the season. And then in the evening, the businessmen come out and entertain their guests. Maybe they drink a little bit too much sake on occasion, but in general, they're very well-mannered, and it was a real pleasure to be there with our group.
Mm. Oh, wonderful. What time of year is that happening?
Well, it's in spring, so that's the kind of our autumn. So the other thing that happens, which is very interesting, just to show the kind of significance to them that the Cherry Blossom Festival is they have reports on when flowers are opening.
Oh, yes.
And so just like we have things like snow reports and things like that, they'll have, so on such and such a street, the flower was nearly ready to burst in, it's kind of like down to the wire.
Yeah.
The April reports are quite detailed.
Yes.
So what about May? Because that's when my birthday is. Is that the right time to go?
Depends on the year and the season, but it's if you're early in May, you might be lucky to get the last of it.
Is it the whole of Japan though, or is it certain areas of Japan? Because Japan's quite a long country.
It is.
Yes, but you can actually find out exactly, almost exactly, if every year it shifts slightly, but when they're expected to flower, in particular parts of Japan. So in the southern part, they'll be much earlier than in Hokkaido or up north, or in the mountainous regions, a bit later. So last time when we went, we managed to get sort of two bites of the cherry, so to speak, both by having experience in Tokyo and in Kyoto, and then we went for a walk through the Nakasendo Trail and up in the mountains, and we kind of got it all over again, which is very nice.
Bonus.
It was a bonus, yes. And then, we weren't expecting it.
Of course, then there's the food and, like, the tea ceremonies they have there.
Yep.
And the tea gardens.
Yes, tea gardens are another type of garden that Japanese have. They have stroll gardens. They have what the kata sansui, which are dry raked gardens, the ones with rocks and sand. And then they have tea gardens, which are all a kind of a significant addition to the whole tea ceremony. So the tea ceremony, you know, which is in a so there's a tea house in the gardens, and you actually go through a double set of gardens before you actually get to the tea house itself. And it's all designed around shedding the world, taking off the
cares and worries,
cares and worries of the world.
Like a sanctuary or something.
Yes, and you put on those little clogs, I can't remember the name of those.
Japanese sandals.
With the little, you know, wooden things underneath that are really, really difficult to walk in. And then, and of course, the gardens are made up of stepping stones, which makes it even harder to walk with those on
them.
Slow down, yeah. It's all about slowing down. And so, and you have an outer garden and an inner garden.
Oh.
And so there's a kind of a sequence to the way in which you do tea, and the way you do it properly is to actually have gone through the garden as well. And you have places to which you stay and stop, and then signals that let you know whether they're ready for your the tea ceremony.
Oh, it's also a hand washing part, isn't there?
Yeah.
Where you often have to kneel down, and it's again that sense of humbling yourself and letting go of your worries and your normal world life and coming into a special space for the tea ceremony.
And the tea house also has a place for humbling yourself where you have to step up on a rock and go through something that's more like a window than a door. It had a sliding wooden kind of opening to it. But even somebody like the emperor has to go through.
Oh, he has to crawl through.
Has to put his head down and enter.
It sounds a bit like Alice in Wonderland.
Indeed.
Yes, it's going into another space that is like sort of shut off from the rest of the world.
Fallen into down the rabbit hole.
We don't usually go into those kind of really kind of special places quite like that, but we have done tea ceremonies a couple of times now. Sometimes just incidentally, when we come across it in one of the gardens.
Mm-hmm. Sounds quite magical.
Yes.
Not magical, but, you know,
otherworldly.
Yeah.
Much of Japan is otherworldly. Some of it's very worldly. And we try to do the contrast. We go to Tokyo and we see a lot of the contemporary architecture in Tokyo. And, of course, it's a big, bustling
metropolis.
Yep. It's enormous. And then we go to Kyoto, which is the old capital, what was the imperial capital, but is still considered the cultural capital.
Yeah.
And where it's everything goes at a much slower pace.
Yes.
Kyotans are kind of known as sort of reserved people, even in Japanese terms, they're seen as more reserved. And the culture is there everywhere. And the one of the greatest expressions of that is the garden.
Yes.
And almost every Zen temple and many other temples and some shrines are Shinto, temples are Buddhist. And they're everywhere, absolutely everywhere. The first time I went to Japan, I'd walk down the street and, here's a place we could go into, and sure enough, they had a garden there.
Ah.
And it's just magical in that sense.
They love gardens. And also a thing about Japanese cultures, they're very particular, very manicured. Like, they will, like their trees, the bonsai, they will train them, like, for years and years. So they will only grow, like, a certain way.
We really enjoyed watching them pruning. People could not believe it. We have so many hundreds of photos of people pruning with very small implements, taking out needles from pine bunches to make them finer and more delicate.
You think about the New Zealand, you know, the whole contrast. We've got all these pine forests.
That's right. And then the moss, they sometimes weed with chopsticks, would you believe? I've watched a woman with her chopsticks pulling little weeds out of a mess of moss, which was lovely to see too.
Yes. And do you think we could take some of those ideas into our own gardens here in New Zealand?
Definitely. Yeah. I think we have had a culture where we think trees should be just left to do their own thing,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it's appropriate, but we've become a little bit obsessive with that, I think. And I think we could well learn some of that shaping up of a tree. The tree doesn't generally mind a limb being lopped off it. And if we manage trees early on, you know, it's a possibility to actually think of trees as adding something culturally.
Yeah. I think the shape of trees often, well, because we're used to the forest and it's just like lots and lots of trees, but you're not really thinking the shape or the silhouette or something like the trunks, you know, the branches.
The management of trees in Japan is very different from Europe, though, where trees are trained to be very symmetrical.
Yes.
In Japan, they're made to look more like windblown on mountaintops.
Yeah.
So, or having some kind of natural attribute to them.
Yeah.
They see a plant as they see the way in which you manage a plant as revealing its inner essence, if you like.
I wonder if the Japanese come to New Zealand on their visits and go to our gardens and. I wonder what they think of our gardens. It'd be interesting to find out.
Yeah.
I know that they love to play on our golf courses. So.
Right.
Yes. I think it's a wide open space that they don't have. You know, the green pastures.
Well, you also have to pay vast amounts of money to be able to play golf in Japan.
Yeah. So they have very small gardens in the city. Well, the urbanites, how do they get their garden fixed? Do they have their, like, balcony gardens or they're just little...
They're very skilled at their entry gardens and pot gardens. So we always enjoy the way that entry is expressed in Japan.
Mm.
As well as plants, there are also things like screening devices with fabric, and Japanese fabric is another world to explore. So screens over doorways and then beautiful trees. There's something called a welcome pine or a welcome tree that often has a large branch that hangs over the entrance to a house, which is another thing they do beautifully. And then they'll just spend a lot of care with either pruning and training plants to be beautiful or having flowering things at that entranceway also. So it really is wonderful walking around the little back streets and seeing how people do get their garden fixed in very small spaces.
Sounds like they treat them a bit like we treat our pets, you know.
They manage them day by day. You know, there's always something for them to be... People sweep the road out in front of their places.
Yes. Every day.
Every day. Yes.
Very high maintenance it can be, I've heard, for Japanese gardens.
Yes, that's right. I think culturally they are, they do invest a lot in their gardens.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting thing about the economy in Japan, which I think we're perhaps moving towards, is their ageing population and the plateauing of their economy has meant that they have developed regional projects to bring more tourism in, which has helped us a lot visiting because more people speak English now and they're more welcoming than they used to be, and that there are several big art festivals that they put on in different regional areas that we have begun to visit. One in the inland sea, the islands of the inland sea, that's the Satuchi Art Festival. And then another one north of Tokyo, in a rural area, Ichigo Samago, which we've also really enjoyed, where disused commercial buildings and schools, disused schools and all sorts of places and spaces are infiltrated with art projects and installations that we've really wallowed in and enjoyed in different times we've been. So it's a very cool way that the government's trying to stimulate visiting.
I want to go.
We sometimes get around in those places by bike, which is really gives you a lot more intimate connection to the little villages and rural places and you know where the rice paddies are and all those kinds of things and see the local people working at what they're doing.
Okay. So when's your next trip scheduled?
We'll be going in October next year.
Oh, right.
So that you can make contact with us via our website and come along and have a chat with us. But before that, we're going to Spain, Morocco, Portugal.
Oh, let's talk about that. I want to find out about...
That'll be in May next year.
That exotic place. So, okay, leaving Japan for now, let's focus on Spain and Portugal. What's the attraction over there?
Well, the core of why those are lumped together is the Moorish gardens.
Yes.
So the gardens that were introduced into the Iberian Peninsula, Spain and Portugal, from North Africa via the, well, originally via from Persian gardens.
Right, yes, the original paradise gardens.
That's correct,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So the sort of essence of those originally was within a walled space, within a, so, you know, an oasis, if you like, in the desert.
Yeah.
And so, but that kind of... idealization of that went all the way across North Africa and then eventually into Spain and Portugal.
Right.
And so in places like the Alhambra in Granada in southern Spain, where the Moors were what are they called?
Palaces there for the royal...
Yeah. So they were there for 700 years.
Oh, yes.
That caliphate.
Yeah.
Sort of the word I was trying to catch.
Okay.
And they, before they were eventually kicked out in 1492, the same year as Columbus discovered America.
The Spanish Inquisition, was that it?
Well, that was around about the same time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, similar time. But they, so there's remnants throughout Spain and Portugal of that culture that came from that time and has influenced the culture enormously. And those places are being restored, rejuvenated, and particularly places like the Alhambra is right there on people's lists, bucket lists if you want to go to one of those kinds of places. Yeah.
I've seen pictures of it. It's got beautiful water fountains and the architecture is amazing.
Yes.
Yes.
One of the things I've realised at the Alhambra is that it's a series of courtyards and each courtyard has, as you say, water in the middle of it, but each time it's treated in a different way. Sometimes it's a great pool, vast pool in the middle, and just a sheet of water. Other times it's more like just a little wee tiny trickle that you can hear. Mm. And in a hot climate, you always get the sense of water, either through the sight or the sound of it.
Okay. And sometimes the cooling effect.
Yes,
too.
And the cooling effect.
That sheet of water is a really effective way of cooling and moistening the air for people enjoying the garden and for the plants.
Is it a very hot climate where that is? Because I'm not that familiar with Spain. Is it?
It's a Mediterranean climate. And in the south there it is hot. Yeah. And fairly consistently hot, I think, throughout the year.
Mm. And so the kinds of plants there, what are the kinds of plants we are looking for?
It's a fairly pared back palette of plants. What are those plants that they have in myrtles?
Yes, myrtles. There's a lot of scented things. Yeah. I mean, rosemary and lavender are very essential Mediterranean plants that are used a lot. Cypress trees are often hedged as boundary treatments to make spaces in these gardens. And then roses and scented jasmines and things. Yeah. They love those things to pick up the scent for the summer.
And oranges.
Oh, yes, I was going to mention oranges.
Citrus is a great favourite.
Yeah.
So the Valencia, is that the...
Yeah.
the blood oranges as well?
Yep. Mm. Yep.
And did they grow those in pots or they right in the ground?
They can grow them in the ground there. In Italy, they tend to grow them in pots, yeah, because it gets cooler. And they
put them into glass houses for the winter?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the amazing architecture, because I want to find out, is that where Gaudi, are you going to go to where he made those amazing buildings?
Barcelona?
Yes.
I remember travelling all around Spain before I got to Barcelona. And I had, of course, I wanted to go and see Gaudi's work. Mm-hmm. And I always remembered going around these places and, you know, initially kind of seeing images of his work and thought, so kind of fantastical and so sort of surreal and out of this world, and where on earth did he was he inspired? But after having travelled through Portugal and Spain, I went, oh, of course. It's kind of there still,
it's
you know.
Already
it's already there in a simpler form, but those kind of curves and organic shapes and rolling kind of tops to fences or to walls and those kinds of things are there all over the place.
Yeah.
It's just, he just sort of gave it.
Exaggerated it.
Yes, exactly, yes.
Is that the mosaics as well? That's all part of it.
It's Julaos. They come from Morocco, so they're Moorish as well. So then eventually were throughout Portugal and southern Spain. Yeah.
Mm. That gives us inspiration for our own gardens, because I've noticed mosaics are a very good combination for gardens, because they don't, you know, they're permanent and they're colourful and they complement the outside space as well.
They do. They bring a bit of life into it with that shiny, glossy surface and bright colours that you can...
Any listeners who are in the South Island, I'd highly recommend a garden called the Giant's Garden at Akaroa if you like mosaics, because the artist there has made a fantastical garden space with all sorts of figures and decoration. It's lovely.
Oh. It must take a lot of time to do all those mosaics, but the effect is just it's fabulous.
It is.
Yeah.
In Portugal, there are whole buildings covered in tiles like that.
Can you imagine smashing up that number of tiles?
They're amazing.
A bit of fun.
Yeah.
One of the Gaudi projects that we go to is the park on the hill, Park Way, and that's a wonderful place to go in the afternoon and while away a few hours. If you're lucky, you get some live music happening there too, and it certainly does make you feel that it's a very special part of the world.
Oh, what about the food? And this is going away from gardens a bit, but when you go overseas, of course you want to experience everything. So what about the Spanish food?
They do it very well. I think one of my favourite aspects of Spanish food is the tapas culture, where you have small plates of delicious little morsels that you can eat with your wine in the early evening. I think that's a very nice way of living in that hot climate, not having a big heavy meal, but small plates of lots of little delicious things.
Excellent. I was thinking about the courtyards that you mentioned, Ian, and how, they have that water feature, and then they have plants hanging off the walls, and like they do that very well, and they just
in Morocco they do that really well in places like the hotels and in people's houses. You can look through. They have a kind of they have a gateway that is more like a grill. And I remember in Cordoba and places like that, peering through and seeing all of these plants that hang or come out of pots or whatever. Yes, which just cool that kind of entryway, that foyer at the beginning of a courtyard of a house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we can be inspired by with our entryways. And I think Aucklanders should, because a lot of people are now living in apartments in the city and they don't have that much space. But there might be a courtyard, you know. Can decorate with plants, and you can have hanging baskets off the balcony.
Yep, that's right. Yes. And it's good to be able to have, and this is what you see a lot in Spain and Portugal and Morocco, the kind of balconies that, or rooms that open into a balcony that then looks down into the courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a kind of a style of architecture that we could emulate here, because it just adds to that quality of the interaction with the outdoors. Mm. So you don't have to come out of your house, but you can appreciate it from the rooms.
Something like an atrium.
Yeah, yeah.
I think some malls kind of do that too, a little, you know.
Yeah, they do. That open space in the middle, don't they? And that opportunity for plants if they're progressive.
We were just talking about that the other day, about how many buildings now have this kind of much more fluid kind of space. And there's a popularity again in indoor plants in most places, and often in buildings that look a little bit like they are makeovers from an industrial age, and they seem to take on the plants really effectively, and it gives quite a homely feel to it.
Yeah, I've seen more and more hanging baskets in like the shops and the cafes, and more indoor plants, because it, you know, sets the place off.
Yes.
Great decorating idea.
And sometimes it's hard to tell whether you actually are indoor or outdoor.
Yeah. And also great air conditioning.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Cleaning the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other places that you go to with your Hikawe Garden tours?
We've been to Italy as well.
Yes, and the Loire Valley in France is another favourite place. Mm. We had a wonderful trip there, cycling a lot along the river because it's not steep at all, and makes for fun and cooling air. And the Chateau Gardens there are extraordinary. If you want grandeur, come to the Loire Valley. But also amazing vegetable gardening. I think Monty Don featured this in one of his gardening programs, where Velandry is one of the wonderful chateaux there that has the most extraordinary large vegetable parterre, which is fantastic.
Parterres and potages. So for those listening, they're spaces that you divide, they're quite geometric, and all very, you know, one vegetable in this area and one in the other, and when you're looking down on it, it looks like a pattern, doesn't it?
Yes.
Quite amazing. Have you been to the Versailles Palace?
Yep.
Yes.
Is that crazy, massive and grand?
It is. Crazy, massive and grand.
Yes, the guy who designed that really wanted to show that he was the king of the world, I think, and wanted to organise the whole of nature for every direction as far as you could see.
So, he wasn't called the Sun King for nothing.
No.
And another garden that's world famous that I don't know if you've been to, but tell me if you have, Monet's garden.
Yes, I have. That's a wonderful garden. First, because of the connection to Monet himself and the connections you make in your brain as you're looking at the gardens and the water lily pond with his paintings, but also the scale of the horticulture and the planning of the way that the perennial beds change colour with the seasons. Never is there a time when the garden seems to be dormant. It seems to have a new colour theme coming through all the time. So the planning involved with having that working as it does is quite extraordinary. And then from that sort of riot of colour, you move through to the lily pond, which is huge, and you know, it's a good walk around the edge and over the red bridge that features in the paintings. And then of course, you know, you just want to soak up that atmosphere of and see those paintings in your mind as you're looking at the lilies. It's beautiful.
Wow, that's so inspiring. I just so want to go. Sophie, Ian, thanks for coming in and sharing your wonderful experiences traveling around the planet, and the wonderful gardens that you might get to go on if you go and sign up for these garden tours.
Perhaps we'll give you our website link for the website.
What's that one?
Oh, that's hikoigardentours.co.nz.
Hikoi.
That's right.
Yep. So thank you so much. Well, listeners, I hope you've all been inspired. And if you're thinking of planning a trip, well, these are the guys to go and talk to. So, yeah, thanks everyone for listening and happy gardening. Bye for now. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.